Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to the Writing Mama Show at BTR's World of Ink Network. Be prepared to call in later and chat with the host, myself, V.S. Grenier, Marcia Cook, and our special guest, Rhonda Fisher, right here at BTR's World of Ink Network, the Writing Mama Show. It's 12 noon Eastern Time on June 30th. As always, the Writing Mama Show can be listened to live here at blogtalkradio.com, World of Ink Network, or you can listen to us on demand anytime you'd like. Or on iTunes, just type in World of Ink Network and you'll find our shows listed. We'll be taking your calls today towards the end of the show. As mentioned, the call-in number is 714-242-5259. Again, that's 714-242-5259. I'd like to say it's truly an honor today to have our guest Rhonda Fisher with us. This is actually a special edition of the Writing Mama Show since we're usually on late at night versus in the early morning. Just want to kind of give you a rundown of what today's show is about. We are going to be talking about the importance of curing blindness. Rhonda Fisher is the CEO and founder of Wim Publishing, and she's the author of Randy Kazanzi, Where Are Your Glasses, which was released, second release of March of 2000. First release is March 2009. Second printing is March 2010. She also has Randy Kazanzi designer-led free eyeglasses for children, named after her character in the book, Randy Kazanzi, developed by Ooh La La Paris, in Hollywood, California, which debuted this year, February 2011. And optometrists worldwide are starting to carry these fun, new, funky, hip Randy Kazanzi line of glasses. So as you can tell, Rhonda is very much into the cause of helping kids see and curing blindness for those, not just here in the United States, but around the world. And also, Rhonda has a son who will be running in the San Francisco Marathon this year in an effort to raise money for the Himalayan Cataract Project, which is helping to raise the awareness of this ever-growing problem worldwide. So it happens, guys, I don't get any sleep, and I get tongue-tied. So welcome to the show.
Okay.
I'll try not to fall asleep. I
we can't even say it's Friday because it's not. Friday, we have
no, it's Thursday.
No,
like I said before the show, my daughter was up all night long, and I was up with her.
Well, that's how babies are.
Yeah. Well, anyhow, we're glad to have you with us again, Rhonda. You're always a delight to have on the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me come. I love returning shows and letting people know what's happening with the Randy Kazanzi and things that you can get involved with your children's books if you find, like, worthy causes and stuff like that. So it's been quite a ride, I will tell you.
Yeah, it's
a fun ride at that.
How did you get involved? How did you get involved with this? Right, because you just recently started with the Himalayan, and I was on the websites last night and looking at some of these. It was unbelievable. Some of the YouTubes that were on, and I think people, if they could, go into YouTubes. I mean, I think it's on. Actually, did you put it on your site? I think it's on.
I didn't. I'm still waiting. I have a person who's supposed to be updating my site regularly, and they're very, very slow. So things don't get put on as quickly. And as soon as I can find a web designer who can update
me, they can actually go on the site that you hit. They can go on that's where I got them, from the www.cureblindness.org. And they can see about six of them. There's six. There's about six YouTubes.
Oh, okay. Oh, I thought you meant on the Randy Kazandy website. I don't have it on.
Well,
that.
I did, but if it's not there, it's on here. It's actually they can go. That's where I went in last night.
Oh, right, and then they can watch all the kinds of movies, and about the whole situation. But my son, Oliver, who has been. I've always trained my kids to always give back, and I want to do the same thing with the Randy Kazandy book. So I look for things that I think are heartening and noteworthy to give to somebody, and you know, because it's hard times right now, and to give to associations and stuff, people are second guessing everything. Is this a worthy cause? And why aren't people staying in the United States? Type of thing. And why are you doing this? And my kids are all musicians, and they've been playing in, like, nursing homes and playing their music the whole time growing up, you know, giving back. And my son's an athlete. He's going to be going to medical school. He wants to be, sports medicine surgeon.
He's coming to Chicago.
Yes, he's coming to Rush. He got into Rush, and he's all excited, got his apartment. He's already there. And he's always, you know, he's running these marathons, and so they gave them 10 foundations to decide who they wanted to help, and when he saw the Himalayan Cataract Project, he immediately called me and he said, with the Randy Kazandy book, and he goes, you have to watch these movies, you have to read about this organization, and I did, and I was, like, blown away, mostly, that for $20, the price of a Randy Kazandy book, that somebody could get this cataract surgery done and be healed and have the gift of light. And when I watched the movie from Lisa Lang, she does the National Geographic movie. She did a documentary. She went with them on this stroll, a 4-mile hike into the, you know, Ethiopia, and found this these people. And for $20,
they can't see anything. They can't. They're blind.
They're blind. The elderly people. Some of the elderly people were. You're just sitting in the corner, not functioning, their children had to, like, take them by the hand and lead them around, and these doctors who were taking a hike discovered these people, and they were ophthalmologists. I guess they climbed the Mount Everest, and they're rock climbers. Were ophthalmologists checked them and said, this is curable. We can, these people don't have to be like that. So when they performed this, like, 10-minute surgery, the next day they were able to see again, and the people were like, thought that they were their god or something, that they had light.
Well, I read where one woman said to her son, just push me off, she wanted to be pushed off a cliff. I mean, it's really that bad, that she just didn't want to live anymore. And that's when he found, because it's one of these videos showed that. And she just said that she just really wanted to give up. And then when they came, now she can see.
And it was... Exactly. And, you know, the terrain there, unless you actually see it, the terrain is so steep that if they even tried to take a walk outside, they could fall they could fall to their death. Of course, they don't know what to do with people like that. They don't, you know, they don't have that kind of medical care over there. And I guess the sun rays from the Himalayan is very, you know, it causes people to get cataracts at a much sooner rate than we are. And we, of course, can't do, for $20, couldn't do a surgery cataract.
Well, you think it might be because there's no, I mean, seriously, there's no trees or anything. There's no shade. It's just all.
Exactly. And they don't have sunglasses.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like they can put up sunglasses on, and their eyes are constantly being exposed, and their diet is poor. So if you're not eating vegetables and a lot of the stuff that we get, then you're going to be depleted in a lot of areas, including your eyes go bad. And
that's the message for kids, I mean, too, I'm sure. That's, you know, that if they start out young eating vegetables and eating right, you know, maybe, the, you know, because their eyes, it's so important. That, you know, I think people take it for granted. They take things
exactly.
for granted.
Exactly. You need the vitamin A to be, to keep your eyes healthy and stuff. And, you know, you need blueberries and you need fruits and you need the vegetables and stuff. And they're not getting... They only have, like, a very restricted diet over there. It's poverty. It's poverty at its lowest, you know. And it's amazing. And when the doctors would say things like, you know, we need to treat everybody like they're part of our family, no matter where they are. And that's when it hit me, like, we have to help these.
Did you know what's interesting, though? They had a show on, I think it was, I don't know which station it was, one of the networks, you know, not cable. They had a really good... it was really it's a was a really good series. It was called Map of the Map of the World. I think it was something like I think it was on 7 or 5, and it was really a good show about doctors that went to remote countries to try to help people. And it was really a good show. And guess it's off the air. I mean, see, that's a show that should have stayed on the air, because there's all these doctors from America going to help people, and they're showing, you know, what they can do. Just and it's not even like major medical things. It's just small things that we take for granted every day. And they took it off the air. So, I mean, that's a bad thing, because this would show people here how lucky we really are. I don't think people realize how lucky we are.
Well, I was going to say, Marsha, I think they still have on, I mean, like on Discovery TV and like.
No, but this was on the regular,
but a lot of people have cable now, and if they would just watch like National Geographic and, you know, because those are usually part of their basic cable plan, they would see, you know, which people don't watch, but they do still have shows like that. And it's not
well, but I mean,
you know,
this one, it's interesting that they took it off, because this is, you know, it's a, when it's on, you know, ABC, NBC, those, there's, you know, tons of people watching, and it's really a shame that some of these shows that are really written well are off.
Mm-hmm.
Right,
yeah,
and
I
know, and it's horrible, because it's so educational to be teaching people. I mean, we're all going to get cataracts, I'm sure, you know, like one stage of our life, and we can,
this friend of mine,
he had to have cataracts in both of his eyes. He go in to get this treatment, and he's like back at his daily life. In these people, a whole white cloud comes over their eyes, and they can't see a thing.
Right.
And I actually watched.
It's not only older people; it's young kids too.
It's young babies are born. Some babies even here are born with cataracts, and they can do the surgery. And it's amazing how young. And some of the kids over there have it already, and they do the surgery on those. And the doctors, Dr. Ruett and Tabin, are the doctors' names who are the called the miracle doctors over there. And they're renowned. I mean, one of them is the one that he knows more about eyes than anybody else in the world. I mean, he's like, and he's lived in the poverty. He's lived with the people and taken his family over there and lived to treat the people. And what a gift that is, to know that he could be living over here in the air conditioning and the comforts of what we have in the United States. But yet he's over there, because when he looks at their faces, when they can see light, when they can see again, can you? It's like God. It's like I've given you your sight back to those people. They think that they treat them like God, and they bow to them after they see. And they.
It is nice that our doctors do go there. You know, the thing is though, you know, before I really knew about this, and you told me about this, and then I went in and looked, and it's heart-wrenching actually. You know, when you see that, because it's also heart-wrenching to see people live like that in such. You know, without everything we do take for granted. I guess that's just how it is. But I think these doctors that go there are incredible. And I was watching the doctors. I mean, I had worked for doctors for years. They were very gentle and so kind that it's, you know, I hope that your son will, be some type of a doctor like that kind, because that's really matters. I mean, I always look at how doctors,
He is the type of, you know, he's got $20 in his pocket, and he would give it to you if he knew that you needed food. He'd give you the shirt off of his back.
That's a great way to go through medical school and to feel that way.
And
I have a question really quick. Sorry, guys. Because I was looking, you know, because obviously I was putting the stuff together for the show, Rhonda, for today. And, I mean, I know that they're focusing on, you know, basically everybody out in the Himalayas and stuff, but do you know if they're, because I didn't see anything just in my short kind of, you know, looking around to kind of gather everything together, if they're going to focus in on, you know, because I know that obviously it's a problem worldwide, but because my grandfather had cataracts, and I actually had an aunt who also went,
blind
from cataracts.
It's a very common thing.
Yeah, and neither one of them ever had the surgery at all, and it was because they couldn't, because they didn't have medical insurance. Because they, I don't know why my aunt Leola never did, but I know with my grandfather, he owned his own body shop and stuff, and he always made sure his employees were covered with insurance. But he never really, most of the time, had medical insurance for my mom and you know, her siblings and stuff growing up. And so as he got older and was retired, he had no medical care at all, other than out in California with, you know, what they have, and. So he was never able to get the surgery. Now, he ended up having a stroke and dying way before he ever went completely blind. But do you think that they're going to ever focus in on the fact that there are people here as well that are in poverty? I mean, because I just didn't see anything that, you know, that talked about that. And I just was wondering, since you're more involved in the cause.
Well, you know, I'm just learning about it mostly. I mean, it's if you can believe this, I've only been involved in this in probably about 2 weeks now. My son called me last minute. I wish he would have given me a few more months to say, you know, I was just overwhelmed with it. And I've always thought that people had, if anybody's listening, can call in and verify or whatever. I thought everybody had Medicaid or some kind of insurance.
No, they don't. They do not.
They don't.
No.
They don't.
No, they do not. We talked about this briefly. And, you know, I know that I have various charities that I like to donate my books, you know, from each book. But I think that, you know, I'm going to be doing that more. It's just that my problem, I'll be truthful, is every time I see a charity, I go, this I want to, there's so many now that I just want to keep giving. Because when you really start looking around and seeing how much in United States and other countries, everywhere, there's a lot of illness and sickness and things that could be better for people, you know. And in this case, I mean, for $20. See, like, that's what the thing is. There, it's $20 gives them a cataract operation.
And, you know, I was reading on their website.
You can't get that here. You're not going to
get
that here.
I know, and I was looking at the price of a cataract, a regular price of a cataract surgery.
Oh, it's a lot of money. It's a lot of money.
Well, you know what it says on their website? It says it's $120. And I'm thinking, why are they charging us so much money if it's only $120? And that's why I want to find out. I want to do some stuff. Because after the July 15th, I'm going to find some – because I would love to have, you know, like, save $10 off of each pair of Randy Kazandy glasses that are being sold and put in the Randy Kazandy fund eventually. Yeah. And where people, like your father, who couldn't get his cataract surgery, could say, hey, wait a minute, I know of a Randy Kazandy foundation, or get hooked up with the Lions Clubs or something like that and find out.
The Lions Clubs does – they give glasses and things, but – and I
yeah.
think they do give it for the USA, you know.
Uh-huh. I'll have to call them and find out what they do. Everybody does their own little thing. I really want kids to be able to get a free eye exam and glasses if they
yeah.
can't afford it, like the homeless people. I really want to help and focus in on those types of people.
There are doctors here that do really a lot of good work like this. And I think probably, you know, we talked about this before. I'd like to find some of these guys, these doctors, you know, and see what they're
mm-hmm.
doing and maybe, you know, talk about that a little, because there are a lot of people that, and you're talking about nutrition. And if you don't have nutrition in the United States either, or in the, you know, remoter countries of that, if you don't have that, then that's why eyesight is, you know, that's why you have a lot of problems sometimes, and that's why people have to think about this. That's why there's so many organizations. We have to probably find some, you know, that take care of young children a lot, you know, that can help them. Because there are, I'm sure, a lot. If they have it there, we have it here.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like my mother-in-law is visiting us from Albuquerque right now, and she's scheduled to have her cataract surgery and worried that they're going to take her car away. When you get older,
you know,
if you don't have that vision, you know, to be looking on the sides and it's a cloudy vision, you know, they need to give them eye tests and stuff like that.
Yeah, they don't have that peripheral
vision.
And
they want to feel like they're functional, and they want to go as long as they can and have their license and just be functional, and they need to have that cataract surgery. And I know, Virginia, when you said my father was one of the victims of, went into the doctor because he had chest pains and his blood pressure was, you know, way over the roof, and they wanted him to stay in the hospital, and he didn't have insurance, so he went home, and he died that night at home. He had a massive heart attack. So these people that don't have insurance and stuff, it's horrible. It's like, you know, how can this be?
How can it be that it is? That's why they're trying to work on health care, and I think that maybe there's something that we can do eventually, you know, to try to raise funds for, you know.
Right, if
people
can come forward and say, hey, let's do this, let's help this, you know, that's what we really, really need to do.
Well, I think that's a good thing, because I think I feel always better that way. You know, I always worked with cancer groups and different groups, and I do feel that way. So, I mean, that's one of the things that we can all do. And if anybody out there is listening, you know, and they have any causes that, you know, they'd like us to discuss, or, you know, on one of, you know, either this show or one of my shows, A Good Story is a Good Story, I'm happy, you know, if you email me, at mba3308@aol.com or go into www.michiganavenuemedia.com. I'll talk to Rhonda in Virginia, and we'll talk about these things. You know,
yeah, we can brainstorm and maybe come up with something, and we can start small and then work our way. And the thing is, you know, with the with these causes, like with the Randy, we started the team, my son started the team Randy, on the site that we're raising money for. And so we have people like you two, who Virginia and Marcia have donated books for the cause. We're going to have a silent auction here in Paola. And then we had Pamela, who...
You want to say where Paola, you want to say where it is?
Oh, Paola's in Kansas.
Right.
In Kansas, oh, about 30 miles from the city. So I'm like in the suburbs of that. So we have people that are donating their piece of illustration that they've done and some books, and then we're going to have a blind, and 100% of it goes to the Himalayan Cataract Foundation that is going to be held at the marathon is, I think, July 31st is the marathon where people are going to be running, and people have till July 15th to either donate $20 or even if it's jewelry. It can be anything artsy that you think somebody would want. It can be a piece of pottery. It doesn't matter. We will take anything that you have. If you have something sitting around your house that fits really pretty, but I just really, I'm trying to clean house, you know. Well, send it my way. Send it my way, because we'll have a blind, and you'll be saving somebody's life. You know, these silent auctions, every cent is going to be going to the foundation.
Yeah, and just so our listeners know, I was going to say, just so our listeners know, there's a link to the Cure Blind, to the Himalayan Cataract Project, which is cureblindness.org. And then there's it's just too long of a link, so I'm not going to even read it. But we do have the Team Randy link as well, but it's a long
one. Yeah, but look
one,
for the
so.
Team Randy on there, and look for Oliver Fisher. He's on the team, and that that's his. He gets the credit. They say thank you to him for the donations that he gives. So it just helps him with his run that he's doing. So we appreciate it and love every single person who's giving in this endeavor, and then we're going to be doing some stuff over here as well. So, like Marcia said, if you're listening and you want to get involved, please contact us.
Yeah.
Because we would love to brainstorm.
Yeah, I think that's what I think that's one good thing that we can do, you know, in the future with other things. You know,
mm-hmm.
I like to do that. You know, I think, so tell us today what you're really going to do there today. You know, are you going to read the book to the, everybody? Yeah, I think they said
today
you're doing
they're
the
having
reading.
A, they're having
is
a
it today the reading or not the reading today?
The reading is, well, today in Kansas City they have warnings out. This is the day that we're going to be outside with the hot air balloons giving, you know, the Citizens Bank Appreciation Day rides to kids, and we're going to do a book signing outside. It's already, like, I think 110 degrees out there. In humidity, massive humidity. So we're going to be spreading the word of the, you know, passing out flyers and stuff. We're going to be having food clowns, all types of people. And I've kind of partnered with the Citizens Bank. They're going to be starting Randy Kazandy bank savings accounts and things like
idea.
That. We're working on with, and I'm writing a book of Randy Kazandy, how he's saving money and stuff like that. So Randy Kazandy is going to be in all kinds of areas. He's going to be helping people. He's going to be having friends.
I think that's good for kids.
Pardon?
Great. That'll be great for kids to read that.
Yeah, and so they can, you know, he's going to be like the Tom Swift of the 50s. He's going to be riding in airplanes and learning music and bagpipes and different musical instruments and encountering all kinds of dilemmas. So everybody will want to see what Randy Kazandy is doing next.
Well, I think if it helps, you know what, I think it's good when kids learn very young to help. I think it's a good idea.
Oh, yes. That's why I always had my children, you know, like, and, you know, Oliver worked in the ICU. He volunteered in the ICU for 4 years. And, you know, he wanted to see if he could handle that kind of, he said that the sadly, when you're in ICU, usually you do not come out. So he was around death a lot, you know, to see if he could handle that when he was to become a doctor. So he loved it. He's a healer. He's a violin, you know, even with his violin playing and stuff.
Well, music is a very good thing for people that are ill.
Exactly.
You know, to hear it.
My daughter was playing
help.
The harp, in the, she was playing the harp there, and they said, maybe that's why the people are dying, because they're hearing the harp music. It's so beautiful. The music is like the way, you know. So, but they've been helping hands since they were really little. I have pictures of them in my And I even forgot about all the stuff that we did. I was looking through the albums because I'm like the empty nester right now.
Yeah.
All of my kids are like off in college. And
so I think I could feel like Virginia's hearing that mean sleep.
You know what? Enjoy them because it goes by so fast.
That is the truth. That's what I miss. I know. It's true.
And I couldn't have done, my hat goes off to you because when I had, I had four and they were 2 years apart. I had three in diapers at the same time. I couldn't have done this kind of work, this publishing and writing and editing and then to raise a family and to be up all night with babies and then taking care of the husband who's another child is, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah.
You said that, not
don't
us.
Give him attention.
Not us.
When the babies
I agree.
Come,
my husband will get mad, but I agree.
Yeah.
You know, when the babies come, it's like the husband gets sit on the back burner a little bit because he has to. The babies need you, you know. And it's like they go through withdrawal. It's like, whoa, you know, it's like, that wonderful attention. I'm not getting it all anymore, you know. So it takes a while to get used to that, too.
Yeah.
With kids. And so the whole Randy Kazandy series is about things that I used to do. We used to have every Friday night was our night out at home. We couldn't afford a babysitter at that time. We'd have the candlelight dinner, and we put the kids to bed real early, and that was our night out right in our own house. So you do what you have to do.
That's right.
If you want to go out with your
husband. Did you have to cook, though? I mean, did you cook?
Oh, I loved it because I knew that, you know, you knew the kids were going to be in bed by like 7:30. You just change the clock so they don't notice. You know what I'm saying?
I've heard of people
do
that. I've heard of some people. That, like, they close the drapes. They go, nighttime.
How come it's still light outside? You know, it's like
in Alaska, I think it would be hard, though. What would you do then? It's light. It's light a lot.
Exactly. And so those are the types of things. And making a memory with kids is so important to really nurture your children when they're growing up. And people ask me, when did you start writing? Well, I started writing in a diary when I was real young, but I always wrote quotes on the mirrors in the bathroom every morning when the kids got up to go to school, like something from Mark Twain or something, a wonderful quote, and you can feel good about
that. That's a good idea, yeah.
And so they always looked in the mirror and they always read it, you know, like smile today or do something kind, a kind act for somebody, help somebody or just something like that. Then when they got older, they started writing. You know, every time you go in to get makeup, you know, they give you those free samples and stuff. Well, you know the real red lipsticks that you would never, or orange, you would never wear? That went on my mirrors.
You know what? My father did that. You know, he used to put like little stickers in the cabinets. When you open the cabinets, he would smile, you know, and he was not so bad, you know. It worked work for my sister, though. She still got mad, so it didn't matter.
And then the kids started writing back to me when I got older. But there was this book that I interviewed because I review books for all of these, you know, reviewers. And it was all the P.S.s. This one boy used to write letters back. He lived far from his parents or something, and he was going to boarding school or something. And the mother would always write P.S., some kind of a love quote or whatever. And that boy, when he grew up, took all of those P.S.s at the end of the letters and wrote a book. Beautiful.
Wow. That's really nice.
It's ideas like that.
Wow.
That, like, you know, gives you ideas to put a quote on something. I love quote books. I love poetry. That's why my books are in rhyme. I love the rhyme. And, you know, in a lot of these publishers, they don't like the rhyme. A lot of times the rhyme...
I don't understand that at all. I can't understand it because kids love rhymes. I know, but
they
don't.
They do. They absolutely love it. And you have to go outside the box and you have to, you know, do your homework. I mean, you have to get... Sometimes, you know, like I'll be reviewing something and it has absolutely beautiful rhyme. And then the last two pages, they blow the whole thing by not rhyming. And that's when you need an editor.
Yeah.
People who are writers and listening to this, please get an editor who can. And sometimes they need to specialize in the rhyme because you can ruin a book in a when you're trying to star a book from a 1 to 5. You can blow 2 stars right off the top by not rhyming those last two just to get... And that's what...
Why do you think they
know,
did that? Why do you think
and
they
I know
did
from
that?
And I know from being, you know, a publisher myself that they should have come to me. I would have helped them rhyme it so that it would have been beautiful and it would have held all the way to the end. I had a real stickler of
I've offered that to people when they've come to me and their books don't rhyme, and I say, I'll help you, and then I talk to them, and they sit down, with I'm saying, what's wrong with it, and then I never hear from them again because they don't want to hear that they might have a problem.
Oh, you have to take the criticism. You have to be
able to.
You know, you learn from it. That's what you do. You learn from it. And if you want a librarian to be, there's a difference for the people out there. There's a difference between writing a book for a hobby and having everybody in your family buy a copy. And then there's the book that has to be proper, and it has to be, you have to follow some of the rules. If you want the librarians and the teachers and the people,
that's
all
important.
Trust.
That's really important, the librarians.
Oh, yes, and that's what the goal should be. If you're going to write, do the best job that you can possibly do, even if it's one book.
Right.
That's my philosophy. Don't do 10. Would you rather have one really good book behind your belt or 10 not-so-great books? Do you know that illustrators, you know, when I'm interviewing for Random House, for Simon & Schuster and all these big companies, and they, you know, and they say, this one author calls and she said, the story is not that great. I was going through a divorce. And can you be a little easy on the review? And she said, but she got the best illustrators that money could buy. I mean, paid $7,000-$8,000 for a 32-page picture book. I mean, the fabulous illustrator. She goes, because I thought that would compensate for the story, because the story wasn't that great.
No.
But you know what?
The words have to matter.
And you take a story. My philosophy is you take a story, and if it's fabulous, then you get an illustrator, and the illustrator's fabulous, and you put the two together, you have a masterpiece.
Yeah.
And you have to work and work. When I go to schools, they go, how many times do you redo? Redo? 400 times, maybe?
Uh-oh.
And the kids are, like, blown away. You know, they're like, oh, not once or twice, because they get so upset when the teacher corrects them once or twice. So they always whisper in my ear, tell them how many times you really have to correct their work. And I told them so that they go, oh, and she said it was the matter of she would tell them, but they would go in one ear and out the other, like the parent tells them. But if a stranger says something, all of a sudden they heard it for the first time.
Right.
And they now they'll go back and they'll correct, and then if the teacher says, no, it's still wrong, they'll go back and keep trying to correct it and try to get it right.
I'm really hard on myself, and, you know, if I'm doing a script for a movie, if I don't find the right word, I don't care if I have to do that 17 times and keep repeating it. I have to find that right word, because even one word can make a difference in what you're doing if it's the wrong word.
It's a little harder in rhyme, because there were a couple of places she, you know, I had to change. She wasn't happy with. And it's like you have to change the whole story. And I've learned so much from working with Kim Spinagle. She's the illustrator of my book. She, I gave her the manuscript before. Don't ever do this, people. Before I gave it to the editor. So you have to go to the editor first. Get it all done. I did it kind of, because I thought it was, she wasn't going to, you know, in my mind, you know, when you're first writing, you know, they're not going to change anything. It's going to be good.
Ooh.
But with rhyme, it's a lot more brain-racking to make sure that the rhyme of the book and everything goes into place, you know?
Yeah. It has to go into place. I know. It is funny how that goes, though, when you are a writer, how you can work on one specific thing, but you have to. I mean, because it really does matter.
Yes.
I'm glad you're saying that.
I still don't like a couple of the changes that I made, because every time I'm reading it or reading it out loud, those words are still coming to me the way I originally wrote it. You know what I mean?
I know. I do know that. Yes, I do.
I know that, and I talk about that. I talk about that in the schools, you know, like when I'm reading the book, you know, and then we go back over the book and we talk about, you know, where the illustrations and who they are in my... You know, I told them I used family members and stuff like that, and but you know, we got it all good, and those are the lines she told me. You have to, are you writing this for your family, or are you writing this for librarians and school teachers? And it has to be proper, and it has to be perfect. So I listened to her, and that's probably why the book got 4 awards like it did. So
it's true, because I just during my blog post I'm doing right now on my book Baby Seen a Sugar Paw, because it just got released into ebook, so I'm retouring. And one of the blogs, I think it's the Children's and Teen Connection, I think is the full name of the blog. Anyways, yesterday I had a guest post up, and they had asked me to write an article
about picking the right words for your picture book. And it's true, and because, like, even with my book, Babysitting Sugar Paw, I had put in there that I wanted to see spilled paint on his parents' carpet, and I wanted it to be red paint. And the illustrator ended up putting white carpet for the living room.
Oh.
Well, you can't have red paint on white carpet because it looks like a blood stain, is what I get this email blast from. So I had to literally take that out so it just says paint. And so now it's any color paint. But it was like, you know, I was trying to stress, like, you know, because red paint, I have any color paint. I mean, that's like the worst paint to get in your carpet. And, you know, it's true. You know, you do have to kind of consider, like, you know, what words you use, and cause, especially because the imagery that, you know, illustrators are going to come up with, you know, and like, I know, like, with proper grammar and stuff, we don't, my son laughs at me because I'll read his papers, or he'll, like, see me when I'm editing stuff, and I will change stuff, and he's like, but Mom, that's not how I would say that, and I'm like, but if you wrote how you, and I always tell him this, I said, if you wrote how you spoke, I said, nobody wanted to read what you had to say.
I know,
like,
exactly.
Because, you know, it's supposed to be speak, and so he's just looking at it.
But you know what, that's true, though, because when, you know what, when you're writing a script, like a movie script, it's different, because there, when you write people talking, they do, because people do not talk in a perfect way.
Right.
So it went, that's, but it still has to be edited right. Even if it's not, even if it's not perfect, it still has to have the right editing on it, because people do talk. They don't finish their sentences. They say things two or three times to get a point across, you know, and things like that.
Yeah.
But that's okay as long as it's edited good.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think if people read certain books and they really like what they're reading and they like the way that editor, then you use that editor and you just trust and believe that they're doing all of the right things.
Yeah.
Because in my book, she did some kind of a semicolon and stuff and that I've never seen before, and I thought she was wrong. So what did I do?
Well, there are a lot of new terms, though. There are a lot of new things that they use. Yeah.
I checked with the Harvard Dictionary of Literature.
Oh, yeah.
And to find out if she was right or wrong, and she was right on the money. And it doesn't look like it's right in the book. It doesn't look, because, you know, we're not used to seeing words done up like that. But I liked it. I go, hey, it's right. Put it in. Because she said I could change it to another way. And I said, no. And I said, because, I researched and checked. And so she's all that, you know. She knows what she's doing. But for instance, one of the little phrases in the book was, in the Randy Cazandy book, this is what she changed it to, and I'll tell you what I had, and you tell me which one you like better. It's got, the fifth pair of glasses lay deep in Mom's purse. She reached in to find them, oh, what could be worse? That's what she changed it to. This is what I had. The fifth pair of glasses lay deep in Mom's purse. Not a storm or a nightmare would have been worse. She didn't like the storm or the nightmare.
Well, but the truth is, though, for a kid, a nightmare is worse, you know what I mean?
You know,
well, you know,
I can see
you
where you're coming from.
I can see
where you're coming from, right?
A storm or a nightmare, and I think she was thinking she didn't want them to have a nightmare over their glasses,
right,
or she had something in her mind. So we changed it to the more mellow. But every time I get to that part, I want to say, not a storm or a nightmare.
Well, actually, you know what you could do, though? What you could do is when you read the book, though, to the kids, add your words. Add your words.
Well, you know what I was getting? What I was going to say, coming from the editor side of it, what she did was actually tighten it and made it more active. Because what you, here's the editor of me speaking, because what you had on, even though it still sounds good, it's more passive and how it comes across and not as tight. Because I just
she knew. So I believe everything that she gave me and everything that she did for me, because she has won many awards for children's books. She's a dynamite, Jill Ronsley, she's from Canada. She is a dynamo editor. And so I trust her, and I know that if I give her something now, I can just let her go to town, you know. Because
You have to be able. You have to trust your editor. That's for sure.
You have to. You have to. And they and I know that she was trying to make that book the best that she could do for me, and that's what it's all about.
Well, that's what is important, because you have to know that they're doing the best they can for you.
So it was just all a learning experience. It's like, you know, you learn and you learn and you keep learning and learning. It's just like this, we're climbing up Mount Everest. You know, we're going to have slips and slides and but you just cannot give up. You got to keep going forth, you know. And
that's
the
message, right. That's the message to everybody out there. That's why we do these shows, because that is the message. Don't stop. just
do
keep
not
going.
Stop.
But, you know, a lot of people stop, you know, but you, it's not, you'll never know if you got there, and if you stop in the middle of it, don't stop. I mean, I always tell people just keep going, because actually some, you know, some of the things that you look back at and you say like, oh, that really wasn't as good as I thought it was, you know, because
uh-huh.
I'm really...
It's just like the there was a biography of Simon Cowell, who actually one of my piano students in California used to go tuna fishing with him.
Really?
And his mm-hmm. philosophy, what, you know, like he was working in a mailroom, his, you know, first job, and he found the smartest person. Yeah, he found the smartest person, followed him around, learned everything from that one person.
Right.
And
yeah.
he, you know, and he said it isn't always, you know, like with American Idol. Because everybody knows American
right.
Idol, right?
Yes.
Because when you get something yeah. so wonderful and so at the top where it can't get any better, he usually leaves it and goes on to something else, and that's exactly what he did. But he said it's not always about getting to the top. Yeah, hooray, we've made it. He goes, it's the ride.
Yeah.
Walk, you know, getting to the top
yeah.
and trying to do this, trying to do that, trying to work
yeah.
this out, trying to work that out. And then it happens. It's a slow baby steps, baby steps, baby steps. You have to have that drive inside you that when everybody comes back and declines and says your book is not right for us, and, you know, you want to go sit and cry in a corner, but you know what? You just look at your manuscript and you say it's their loss. Let me find
yeah.
somebody who can appreciate my writing.
Right.
And somebody
or they can, or you're right, or they, you know, now, see, now the good thing is, but it's, you know, the market isn't as good for children's book on e-books as the adult market, but it's getting there. But it puts everybody on the same level here, because if everybody's on e-book, the reader gets a shot at everybody this time, and that's a good thing, because books that may never have been read are now getting read.
Uh-huh.
And so that makes everybody, like, getting a better chance than they had before.
Right.
Because
exactly.
of e-books, I think. You know, I really do think it's a good
yeah.
thing.
And, yes, exactly, because everybody, I mean, I think everybody has a story to tell. And I don't even like, you know, the cell phones and people texting. I mean, we're losing a lot of letters. And, you know, we're sitting here reading the Beethoven and Chopin's, I'm a musician, so letters that they wrote way back when they weren't playing their music. They were writing these long, intense letters talking about, you know, every single thing that happened in their life. And I'm not going to know about, you know, like, your life if you're texting people and talking on the telephone.
Well, that's
all
what
the
I
time
said. That's what
writing.
I said that the other day. We were emailing back and forth. I go, oh no, I'm calling because I cannot keep doing this. I have to
yeah.
talk to her because, right, I'm not going to sit back and forth and keep doing this. It'll take 2 days to do that. Just we'll get on the phone and talk. But people
yes.
don't want to do that anymore.
Yes. And, like, there is a person behind all of that craziness,
yes.
you know?
Yeah, the bad thing is sometimes you don't know if there's a who is behind that. That's one of the pitfalls of Facebook. You don't really know, actually, sometimes who you're talking to.
Right.
Yeah, I was going to say, Marcia, we were just talking about that the other day,
yeah.
and we won't
yeah.
say what site it is, but there's a site out there that even though it's under a girl's name, we keep thinking it's a guy who's really behind it because we can never get that person
yep.
to communicate with you.
Yep. I have a feeling that they will not, because I don't think it's, I did a script like that where people, you know, it was a reversal. And the truth mm-hmm. is, we don't really know if they won't talk to you or they don't want to talk. Sometimes they say they're a woman and they're a man and they're a man, they're a woman, just like that. So you don't really know who you're talking
yeah.
to, you know, because it's easy to do now.
It's so
oh, yeah.
it's so deceiving. It's a great deceiving.
Ugh.
I mean, look at all the predators that are on the mm-hmm. on there, you know, with nothing else to do, pretending they're so-and-so and this and that. So, you know, you have to be careful. I mean, I would hate to have little children now who are just learning the computer because they didn't have as much of it going on when my kids were growing up. Matter of fact, my kids weren't allowed to use a computer unless it was a school-related, and I never let them watch TV from Monday through Thursday. They could only watch TV like on, you know, Friday, Saturday, or Sunday, just something that I approved of, which was hard to come by.
Well,
know, so I was a very, you know, strict with them more in that way. They were doing music. They all played musical instruments, and they were practicing that for, like, you know, a couple of hours a day. They were practicing music, and then they were all in sports. So they were either at sports, music, or doing homework. And that fills your whole day up.
Yeah.
And so they didn't have time for that. I know a lot. Or the computer. They didn't, you know, like there's a lot. I have two little boys who live next door, 8 and an 11-year-old. They're never outside playing. They have a swing
yeah.
set and they have things out there. And I said, it's like we don't have any little kids in the neighborhood. I don't see the kids. And they say they're in the house, you know, playing Nintendo games. And, you
yeah.
know, that's why kids are obese now. And they're not.
Now they don't even have to be. They can play games with each other on the on the TV, where you know the ex is at the ex. What's it called?
The Wii system and the Xbox, they both
have. Yeah, the Xbox,
have.
Because the Xbox, when, you know, you can talk to your friends over the TV. You don't have to, you're not in the same house. So you're playing with them, but you're not in the same house.
My son, we don't have an Xbox. We have the Wii, and they now have where you can connect it into the Internet. And for the longest time, we wouldn't do it for my son because he's like, oh, come on. And so finally my husband gave in and connected into our router. And that's what he does. And and I can tell when he's on there because obviously my bandwidth goes down after, like, Dom and I.
Are we
going
to get four? My friend, he had a 15-year-old, and she had to take him to the doctor because his bums hurt. And it was because he was playing the Nintendo so much, he had arthritis.
Yeah. That's another thing. They get the carpal tunnel could come to them earlier than they think. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Things like that.
It's all those little intricate movements that causes the fingers. I couldn't believe it. 15 years old.
But on the other hand, it's good for small motor movements too, though. That's the other thing, though.
In limited, limited time frame. Yeah. So that's been our summer, Rhonda. Unfortunately, I have to say that we do have some kids out in our neighborhood now because we've had a few families with younger kids that have moved in. So the littler ones seem to be out, but when they hit about the age of 10 and 12, it's like you don't see them unless they're walking to and from someone's house or to our, like, little corner market or something.
Because
they're all inside. I mean, I kid you not. I watch my son. He wakes up, and he's asleep right now, so I can say this, but he wakes up, and he basically looks like a big giant troll tromping through my house all the way into the office and sits across and literally, like, throws himself into the chair across from me at his desk.
I
turns
have
on the
one
computer and plays World of Warcraft until he goes to bed at 2:00 in the morning and then repeats.
Well, out of my three boys, I did have one son who's still a child at heart type of thing, and he should have been a computer. He's going for economics major, and for his birthday this year, he wanted another one of those games. I said, are you ever going to outgrow that? I mean, you're in college. He just graduated from college last week, actually, in economics. And for his leisure, he relaxes, he said. It relaxes him.
Yeah, he's not going to outgrow it, and I can tell you that because I'm married to one. And I used to say, my husband's at work. But when I met my husband, he was always on the computer, and I was like, okay, he's a bachelor, whatever, And my, we're born in the 70s, so we grew up during the 80s and 90s, which is when the whole gaming thing started. So I'm like, it makes sense. That's our whole genre. And then and we're married, and he will get on my computer because our computers are networked, and all of a sudden him and our son are sitting there, and they're playing World of Warcraft with each other or Blitzkrieg, and I'm just like, or Call of Duty, all these war games.
If we could figure out a pill or something, how we could put the energy into those guys and kids to help us with our writing and publishing company.
We would get
so much more done, wouldn't we?
My son actually illustrates too, so I get him to help me once in a while when we're down in Illustrator to help with the magazine. But I'm telling you, if your son outgrows it, great. Because my husband's bachelor party, I kid you not, was him and his friends getting together, networking all their computers and playing. I don't remember what game they played, but they played some war type game, and it was like 10 or 15 of them, and like in the middle of his parents' living room, and that was his bachelor party.
And they probably had a grand time, didn't they?
He did. But I was like,
my husband's always on the computer. I can relate to you too. My husband's on the computer. He carries it around with him, and he just got one of those new phones that they have, those cell phones, the ones that do everything. I don't even know what they're called.
The smartphone. Yeah,
the
I have
smartphone.
Yeah,
it's not so smart because I don't even have a husband anymore because he's always on it.
Well, you can
he's
do
a ring
most
for
everything on there.
He's got a dog bark for his brother when he calls, and he's got a different
one. Yeah, you can do that now. Put a different ring for each person now.
Yeah, for each person, and it's like a constant. He's like, he loves it. And I said, oh, my gosh. I go, yeah, that's the world that we're living in, Easy, accessible, and I'm thinking, and games and things that they do on those things, it's like crazy. I don't know. I think the Amish have it right. I was watching a TV show where people were leaving the Amish to come to our society, and I'm thinking, wait a minute, you know.
Well, they want to do some different things. It does, you know, it might get boring for them, you know. However,
it's very boring for them because some of them have the itch to go to college and get an education because they only go to the sixth grade.
Really?
And
yeah.
So they don't want to farm, and, you know, and I don't know if there's any Amish people listening to this radio station, but, you know, my sister said she sees them in Aldi's all the time buying those cookies and stuff. Are they not cooking homemade anymore? She said they're always buying those bad for you cookies and stuff, you know. So I don't know, but anyway, I just watched a special on it. We used to live near an Amish community when we were in Philadelphia, and we used to buy their baked goods and stuff like that and buy their brooms and all that kind of thing. But these kids really wanted to kind of break out, so they were fleeing in the middle of the night. And ex-Amish people would pick them up and help them get started in our world, you know, with radio. Some of them couldn't take it because it was too stressful. They had to go back. But the stronger ones were the ones that could survive,
well,
you know.
This is a pretty stressful world now, huh? It is, you know.
And you have to remember that right now, with all of the, you know, the donations and things that people are trying to do, we are in a recession.
Yeah.
And I remember I was reading a book on Shirley Temple back in the 30s, where we, you know, where the Great Depression was.
Yeah.
Right. Everybody was losing. My mother said she remembers people leaping out of windows, committing suicide. They lost all their money in the banks and stuff. And the one thing that kept them going was Shirley Temple, that little child, the movies that she did.
Well, that's why
that's
really one of the things that people do. They have to find recreation to take their mind off of things.
So we, the writers, and we, the story makers, are keeping the sanity of what's really going on in the world. And so that's the beauty of all of this. We don't want these writers to be writing, but we want it to be edited, and we want it to be of quality, because we want, with everything with Your Story for Children or whatever on it, or your publishing company, you want people to know that, you know, this has been edited, this is, you know, proper, this is correct English, and this is what my work is. And because I look at the publishers of today, and I look at some of the books out there with some of these big publishers, and I think, oh my God, this is trash. How can they do this? How can they let this go through, slip through the lines? So I called one of the big guys. And I said, you know, this is trash. What's going on? Because I can do it because I'm a reviewer, so I can talk to them sometimes like that. And they said, well, where's the writers? Why aren't you hiring the right people? And they said, well, we decided to just do the writing ourselves now and, you know, get our own illustrators. What do we need to be paying them for? And I said, well, it shows in the book. Come on. You know, it shows. It's
why don't you ask them if they want to come out and talk to us? We'd love to talk to them.
I know. It's not quality. It's just,
I would like to talk to them because being an agent for all these years, I would like to talk and know really how they, because people really want to know how they pick books.
You know, it's like, I had no idea. They were just writing, you know, like especially the board books that they did, write them themselves, and they do the real beginner books. They just think they can just slap it together. And it's like, this is meaningless. You know, it doesn't have a point. What is the point of this book? And there's a lot of books out there like that. There's
no
point.
What do they say when you ask them that? What do they say when you say that?
Well, that's when they said, well, we're doing it ourselves. So right there, it told me that they don't care. They just are getting books out there in mass amounts, just any old thing, so that they can say they have so many books that they published.
Well,
but it is
changing because they're not selling them, though. They're not selling like they were.
They're not. They are totally not, you know.
Because people want quality. They do.
Uh-huh.
They want quality.
Exactly.
People really, and to start, you know, but I think that there are a lot of quality authors out there. And so that's why, you know, as we said before, if they're from a smaller publishing independent, it doesn't mean the book is bad. It just means there's more control out there of a good book, you know, and get it done right.
In the smaller publishers, they spend more time with it. It's their baby, you know.
Yeah.
And they should seek out those people because it's like the diamond in the rough. There's many diamonds out there that are being overlooked because, you know, the first thing they look at is, I remember going to a bookstore and I said, you know, do you do book signings here? and they said, are you a self-publisher? And I don't like to use the word self-publisher because they don't take
it. It's independent.
Say,
you're an independent publisher.
Well, I was using a small press. I'm a small press. That's what I would say.
Yes.
I was a small
right.
press.
That is what you are. That is.
And they said, well, we don't do, you know, like, because yeah. I didn't use it in the store. I said self-publishing. That's what made me never use it again. And she
right.
said, no, we don't do that here. And I had my book in my arm. And she took the book and she goes, oh, this is a real book. So I don't know what people are going.
Well,
to
I think
book
I think sometimes they think you just like you know take paper and you do and you maybe you know staple it together and there's your book.
Well,
but it's not like that.
Do. I can only imagine. I can only imagine in my mind what people are giving bookstores and make the rest of us look bad. That's
well,
why
there
they
are
have
people. I was going to say, because I do so many book reviews, you know, with stories for children and stuff, and, you know, we tell people when they send a book, ask you, you know, bookshelf ready, because we want to see the finished product, you know, because
right.
with a gala,
exactly.
a lot of the time, galas are sent, you know, saddle stitched, or they don't have
right,
a full
right, right.
cover art and stuff, so it's really hard to tell what quality the book's going to look like when it's done, and that's important, you know, for us, because, you know, we don't want to...
Right.
And not saying that the writing's bad, but, you know, they do go hand in hand, because, I mean, I've seen...
Well, it still should be looking right.
It
still should look right.
Well, here's and I'll use this as a prime example. And I know David
okay.
Shannon is a huge known name, but his Yes, David book, I absolutely can't stand it. I can't stand that book. And it's not because I hate the story with the text. The actual words are fine. I hate the illustrations. I hate how the book looks as a picture book for kids. I think and I know he illustrated it, but I think that his illustration of himself as a kid is, you know, as little David. He looks scary and mean and just, my girls hate that book.
Now, have you told them that?
No, but I'm sure people are listening. Oh, my gosh, V.S. Grenier just totally bashed David Shannon. Well, I'm sorry, I hate the Yes, David books. And I know it won an award. I know it's with a big publishing house. They actually have the very first one in the series here because it was bought for, great grammar people, was bought for my daughter for her birthday, which is why I know the book. And, I mean, she actually ripped the book because she hated it so bad. She actually ripped one of the pages because she didn't like the little boy's face. She ripped it out. just so you know, like, how much. But the thing is so we asked to see, you know, because that's what we don't want to see else because we want to see the whole thing. But there are a lot of self-publishers out there that they send, you know, 8x11 books that it looks like, you know, the whole book was, like, Photoshopped and it's saddle stitched, you know, where it's stapled. And
uh-huh.
it's like, that's not a book, you know, no. Bookstore is going to, you know, they don't want, is that kind of
they don't, in the library want it.
Saddle stitch is the glue bound, right? And I don't know. Anyways, whatever the one is, it's the stapled version. Bookstores, libraries, they won't carry those kind of books.
No, because the staples are dangerous for children if they get them out
yeah.
of the book. But that's
yeah.
one of the things.
Yeah.
And that's why with my editor, she knew, although I used Warzella for my printing, and, you know, they did an absolutely beautiful job. I know there's a lot of wonderful printers. It was done in the U.S. It was lead-free,
right.
and I used an Auburn 80-pound paper, which is the illustration pops out of the page, but the words on the page don't glare in your face when you're under a light with your child. And we made sure that we got a paper like that, which is, like, very unique and beautiful. And for picture books, it just is stunning when you open it, and it looks quality. It's deluxe, and we did the Smythe sewn, which was top of the line as far as how it fits so it'll last forever. And so we did our research on all of this, and we did research. I did a lot of research for all the different companies and stuff like that. I actually paid Jill Ronsley at the beginning coaching classes with her instead of, you know, like, you know, if you're on the Internet, there's a lot of scammers there, and you don't know who, when you're first starting
yeah.
this business, you don't know who to believe, and all these things pop up, and you go to them, and you think that they're legit, and they're not. And then you need to be checking things with predators and editors and make sure that they're not on that list. And, you know, you have to do your research. So I just paid her for coaching, and I got all my information from her. So I'm getting emails, hundreds of emails from people from the SCBWI and all these places, and they're saying, will you do me a favor? Put on your website a page and charge $25 or $50. I don't even care what the amount is. And just tell us how you did it, just what you did, you know. And when you're out there paying all this money to get yourself educated, what's $25 to make all the right moves, you know. I would have loved it if I could have found a website out there that would have the credentials of, you know, the right people. These are the people that you should be. This one's
yeah,
legit.
But there is no. Well, that's what we try. That's what we try to do, and that's why a lot of the times we have different authors on different. You know, that's why we'd like to get some publishers on. We do get people on, and we are going to continue. I know Virginia and I are going to continue having different types of people because the things that we know, other people don't know, and that's why they get taken advantage of.
Well, I've already started a page because I thought that's a good idea because if I can help people and give them all that knowledge and links of where, you know, even with Paul Krugman with a publicist, you know, I had to pay $400 for information. And, you know, if somebody's paying $25 to get that information that I had to pay all that money for, if I'm helping somebody to do better and not to be keep away from the scammers and, you know, deal with this person, then when you find the people that you deal with, the printers and the people to do, like, your business cards and, you know, I have a source for a business, for a person for business cards. He only charges $95 for 5,000 business cards. Mm-hmm. And they're absolutely beautiful. He used to charge $95 for a 1,000, and then he bought this big, huge machine. And then he
could do it, right.
Yeah, he said, now I can give you 5,000 for the same price. And I said, wow, what a deal that is.
Well, that's what we try to tell people. You know, if I have them on my site, I've usually tried them for something or I know what they do because I really know that this happens out there, and it's very bad for people. They have spent a fortune and not getting what they paid for. It's really bad.
Exactly.
So that's great that you're doing that. Yeah.
And yeah, so you know, it's like the this book that I was reading, the Outliers or the Outliers or whatever that book is called, where you have to spend like 1,500 hours to like get a degree in your hobby. Well, let's say it's a hobby. You become like a graduate of it the more time you spent. And so I've already put in that many hours because I'm like I work 60 hours a week.
Right,
as
right.
you probably know.
Oh, yes, and we all do it, Virginia.
Yes.
You know, it's
know
like
that.
Around the clock. And
yeah, sometimes I feel like it is 24 hours, and it almost is.
And so when I'm getting emails that say, why don't you do a page for us, you know, we would gladly, you know. And so, you know, you can be involved in this if you would like to. You can put your expertise in there. We can give them a couple, we can get an
illustrator. I think that's a good idea. So if you have some links that we could all link to each other to, yeah. So I'm a big advocate of people getting the job done right, and so is Virginia. We both are because, you know, that we know what goes on. And they don't get the job done right, and they pay a lot of money.
Uh-huh. They do. They do pay a lot of money. And so when people are asking you for it, I'm like thinking, you know, maybe I will accommodate these people, you know.
Well, yeah, they just want to know, you know, how to make their career, you know, how to get a start in the right way, not in the wrong way.
Exactly.
So that's a good thing. All right, do you want to talk about your event just a little more before we leave? You know, just what the time again, repeat it, because in case somebody didn't hear what your event is.
Oh, okay. The time is, for the event is, today, actually, the time for people to donate is the deadline is July 15th for the Association for the Blind to, and we're having like an event today from 2 to 5 o'clock. But anybody who wants to donate like $20 or a piece of art or illustration that they might want to get out there, your name will be put in the database worldwide. And we'll probably be doing some press releases, and all of the people who donated for the Team Randy will be listed.
And I know you'll be back again, though, before the event, the next event.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Good.
So, so it's all exciting. So.
It's very exciting. Yes, because, you know, she's got to – you have to go, because don't you have to be there at 2 o'clock?
Yes.
No.
Yes, I do.
Yes.
So we need to get you going.
So I'm on my way to the next adventure of Randy Kazandy.
Yeah, and again, for those who are listening, in the show description page are the links for the Himalayan Cataract Project, the Team Randy, and then also more information on Rhonda and her book, Randy Kazandy, so they can find out more about you. And it's been great having you, Rhonda. It's always fun having you on the show.
Oh, it's been great. It's been great.
Thank you so much, and I hope to return.
Yes, you will. Right. You will definitely return. Yeah. And we're going to work something out that we're going to try to figure out what we can do to donate to different projects.
Okay. You know, and if anybody has a really worthy cause, call us, get a hold of us, and we'll evaluate each one. And if we think it's worthy, if you have something, let us know, because we want to help.
Yes.
Yes,
we do.
So,
And then, Marcia, you have a show tomorrow, so you want to talk about the good stories, a good story that's on tomorrow? And Rhonda, if you need to go, you can go.
No,
ahead.
Okay, the 5th. I'll see you 5th. Oh,
it's too late.
Fifth.
Thank you.
My, okay, no, mine is the 5th. Okay, Rhonda, you want to go? Are you going to go?
Why am I thinking?
Yeah,
I'm going to
go.
Why am I...
Okay, all right, go ahead, Rhonda. All right, good luck. All right.
Okay,
all right,
thanks. Bye-bye.
I'm like on Monday today, can you tell? Because I'm up early on a show, and that's usually what I do on Monday. I'm sorry. Yes, Tuesday, July 5th is a good story.
Yeah, it's going to be, actually it's going to be really exciting because we're going to have Candace O'Donnell, and we're going to have readings. She heals with her hands. She's really good. She's a wonderful writer and a great person. Her name is Candace O'Donnell, and she has her own show, but she's coming on and she's going to do readings, and it should be really something different that we haven't done. So it's going to be interesting, and she's very intelligent, so that's a good thing. And she's got several books, and she'll be on at 8 o'clock Eastern on July 5th, and it's 7
okay,
Central,
then,
6 Mountain, 5 yeah. Pacific.
Okay. Just stick to Eastern. It's so much easier, honestly. And then we're supposed to have a Stories for Children show on July 4th. I still have not heard back from his name's Clayton Thomas, and he actually wrote a book called, I have to find it.
Because I don't see you on there, so did you put it on?
Well, I haven't put it on yet because it is the 4th of July, and
yeah.
Even though the Stories for Children show is on at 1 p.m. Eastern time, well, actually it's going to be 2 p.m. Eastern time because we're moving it by an hour.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure what his plans were for the 4th of July. So we may not have it on that Monday. We may move it to the Friday. I'm still waiting to hear back from the author. Like I said, his name's Clayton Thomas, and his book is called Tantrums, Troubles, and Treasures, A Parent's Guide to Parenting the 21st Century. So it's actually a really cute book, and there's little activities for parents and kids to do. It's a way for them to, you know, open up the communication line since, you know, parents and children are so busy these days between parents both working and running around and being outside the home and, of course, kids and the whole gaming world. So it's a way to bridge that gap and to, you know, to reopen those communication doors since a lot of parents, which I hear all the time from my friends who have kids, like, I just don't know how to communicate with my kid. It seems like everything I do doesn't work. And I'm just like, okay, you know, so obviously there are parents out there. I mean, I'm not saying I'm the perfect parent, so I have my moments, but this is, you know, a way for parents to do that. So I'm hoping that, you know, we'll all know soon enough so I can get the show scheduled. And then Wednesday is
Simon's show, which is a really good show. He has a great show.
Yeah, and he has an author coming on who's like a bazillion books that have been published, so and the author, I can't think of his first name, but his last name I know is Wilson. He writes a lot of books from based around like World War I, World War II. So that will be a very interesting show.
Yes, John Wilson it is. John Wilson.
Thank you. Yeah,
John
Wilson.
I'm looking it up.
Right. Wilson,
John Wilson. No, he has a very interesting show. It's a different show than most of the shows on Blog Talk.
Yeah.
It's a very educational show and interesting though.
Yeah. So that's on July 6th. So that's pretty much the lineup for next week.
Yeah, we're not going to be on on Fridays. We should just, you know, Fridays we will be off till September.
August. Well, the Writing Mama show, this is our last show until August.
Yeah, right.
When we come back with our new format and stuff.
Yes. And so, all right, you have a good weekend, and we'll try to not work so hard, which I know is such a... I say it every week. I say it every day. I'm not going to... My husband, like, looks at me. Okay, right. Right.
All right, well,
I thank you all, and everybody
weekend.
Have a good, healthy, happy holiday, and be safe. That's probably one of the best. All right, so, and get some sleep, Virginia.
I am. I'm going to go take a nap now.
Good. What's your daughter going to do? What is she doing now?
She's going to go take a nap, too.
Okay. All right, I'm going back to work. All right, take care. Bye-bye.
Follow me to the world of Inks.